You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome back to Fly on the Call. Today the show hits the big 5-0 on the first episode of its second year of existence. Especially after last week's network announcement, check out soundtalentmedia.com for all the deets if you missed it, I'm so excited for what's to come. To help celebrate the milestone, today's guest is Elise of Ocean Eater. We talk about her label, Plastic Miracles, 90s merch bundles, Finding the Silver Lining, and more. Her new album, Things I Never Said, is out now in a wonderful mix of heavy grunge, power pop, and everything in between. Get stoked on it.
I know earlier this year you started the Plastic Miracles label, which I kind of read has been, you know, something you've been planning for a while, but the Bandcamp days were something that really pushed you to, you know, fully launch it with like the charity comps that you've been planning. I'm just curious what that kind of like last minute stretch was like for you before you officially launched, and, you know, how things have been going for the label so far.
Yeah, the last minute was pretty stressful. I sent everyone, I had given everybody who was going to contribute like a rough deadline of when I wanted to have things in. And then like 10 days before that, I moved it up like a couple weeks. So we could do it for Bandcamp day, and everyone got their stuff in, which was pretty amazing of them. And it's all very, very cool. So that was rad how that just kind of came together. And then since then, it's been going pretty well. I've learned a lot of new stuff, like just kind of all the back end kind of stuff you gotta do. So that's been cool. And like learning about more about distribution and all that stuff. But yeah, it's been cool, and it's about to like ramp up more. I have I think 4 records we're trying to put out in the fall.
Awesome.
Yeah. So those are all going to be hopefully announced within the next couple of months. So we're working on getting like all the dates and everything together for that stuff. So it's been cool. It's been really good to have a project.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, what was it kind of like the transition period between like launching the label and then, you know, launching the album?
Well, I think I knew before the label launched that the record was coming out, and that it was going to be coming out on Plastic Miracles. I think we figured that out like in April. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the good thing about with the record is I have like a really good team, like management and press wise, who are working on this with me, so that took some of the work and stress out of having to launch that and a label at the same time. So yeah, it's been weird, but I'm excited.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I know the album was, you know, recorded all the way back in like 2018, and you know, there's been, you know, various holdups and stuff before you decided to, you know, take it into your hands for the self-release. What kind of like went into that decision, and how did the partnership with Big Scary Monsters end up coming about?
Oh, that was cool. They emailed Bob, who's my manager, and were like, "Oh, are you working with Elise?" And he was like, "Yeah." And they were like, "Can we hear the record?" So he sent it to them, and then they were like, "We love it. Do you want to work together?" And then like a week later, we announced. So yeah, I don't know. I guess they heard it and they liked it, which was awesome. And I have been a big fan of them for a long time. So I was just like, over the moon, as they say. I was super excited. I'm really glad to be working with them.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that kind of like stood out when you first announced the album was all the pre-order packages that you had. How did you kind of like go about, you know, getting all the merch together and even getting like the ideas for some of that stuff?
Yeah. The postcards was my friend Gretchen's idea. Which she said that And I was like, oh yeah, postcards. And for some reason that kind of, I already had like a shirt idea, obviously. And I wanted to, I mean, you always do shirts. And I wanted to do the tank tops, because I personally like tank tops. And then she said the postcards. And then I was thinking about like, well, at Oceanators, beachy or whatever. So I just, koozies kind of came along. And then I was like, oh, I could make a beach bundle and blah, blah. And then I don't know what, I think the pogs and the tattoos, I was just kind of thinking about like what other, the pogs specifically, I was like, what other things can I do that's like not, that's just something fun and different. And I think it's, I have one pog in my apartment and the rest of them are at my dad's house, but I have this one Mighty Morphin Power Rangers pog that, I don't know, like, I think I just pick it up and move it sometimes because I'm like, oh, it shouldn't be here. So I just see it all the time in just different parts of my apartment. So I think that I just had pogs on the brain. And then the tattoos, I was thinking like, well, what other, this is kind of 90s music. So like, what other stuff was fun in the 90s? And I thought about doing like slap bracelets and stuff too. But once I got the temporary tattoos, I was like, okay, this is enough. I can stop here.
I feel like a big, like full-size beachy, like sun hat would be the perfect merch too.
I know. It would be so cool. I wanted to do like a towel too, but that was super expensive to get like custom towels made. So
yeah, for sure. I can imagine. But I mean, like I said, or like we mentioned earlier, like the record was recorded in 2018, and I feel like it has you know, kind of taken on a much different meaning probably in 2020. I'm curious how you're kind of like feeling about the content and, you know, the way it's kind of changed since it's been recorded.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's weird. It's weird to think about and to listen when I listen occasionally about to how much it could have been written, a lot of it like last month, like A Crack in the World and I Would Find You specifically, and those were the two I picked these singles out like a year ago, you know, so like those were the two that I had, everything was in the order that it came out in, and I wanted to do A Crack in the World and then I Would Find You, and then Heartbeat, which just came out today, actually, as we're talking. And that was the plan. So it was really, it's weird that they are so relevant to write this moment. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It feels weird.
I'm curious, like, what was, like, your mental state while you're writing the record versus, like, how it is now?
I guess while I was writing it, it's a little bit similar. I think while I was writing it, I was coming out of a very dark period and trying to be more optimistic and going into a slightly more hopeful place. And then last year was pretty down again, and so now I mean, apart from general pandemic, et cetera, depression and everything else, I'm more overall like the clinical depression part of it is in a better place right now. So I feel similarly to when I wrote it, which is kind of nice that it like came around full circle.
Yeah, I'm sure, especially with, you know, the fact that, I mean, aside from, you know, being in a better place mentally, like the fact that you're kind of like feeling more similarly to how you were when you wrote the album, you know, that probably, you know, helps you, you know, want to promote it more and like, you know, be able to like connect with it in a different way for sure too.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, I don't feel detached from it, even though it was written a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned like that that Heartbeat came out today, and you know that's kind of one of the more upbeat songs on the album, kind of like a sickly sweet love song in a way. And you know, I feel like the way I view it, it kind of like kicks off that like middle third of the album with like Heartbeat, I Would Find You, and Walk With You, where you know the sounds get a little bit, you know, kind of less grungy and even more like diverse than the previous stuff in the album. What can you tell me about like Heartbeat and kind of about, you know, the sequencing of the album in general?
Yeah. Well, Heartbeat is very, it's pretty much a pop punk sort of, like early pop punk sort of power pop sort of song, with a big guitar lead and it's got your, it's basically like riff, verse, chorus, riff, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. It's basically that, but, or bridge, outro. But I tried to put like a couple other weird things, like the second verse is longer and it has but it has like a hint of the outro. There's like that one section in verse two. So yeah, I don't know. But other than that, it's pretty much just like straight up power pop rock song. And it's super fun to play. It's I think it's like the fastest one that we do live these days. And we played it on the last tour and stuff, which was really fun. And yeah, the sequencing, I was thinking like, yeah, so it splits. The album is, side A is, five songs. Heartbeat's the last one on there. So I was thinking like, you come in with this big 90s grunge and you get it. And then we transition kind of into like a little grungier, more kind of rocky, but like coming out of the straightforwards. We hit Heartbeat and that's like, okay, here we are at the peak of our rock. And then we like wander into this other weird little world with I Would Find You and Walk With You. And then The Sky Is Falling is kind of like it's definitely rock again, but it's still like feels thematically like it's in the world of I Would Find You, I would say. And then Sunshine being at the end was kind of like, okay, we just made it on this big journey. And there was a lot of terrible stuff in there. And everything's going to be fine. And yeah, that was the thought behind sequencing.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned The Sky Is Falling, which, I mean, I feel like that almost kind of like, the stylistically almost like borders on like prog rock, just with like a different guitar tone.
Yeah.
how did that one kind of like come together?
That one, it's one of the older ones too. I can't remember what I played that riff that the guitar does and that's the melody basically. I forget what I played it on first, but I was like, oh, this riff is awesome. So I just built it around that basically. And was kind of thinking of it like, just, I've told this story before, but sound wise, I kind of just told my brother like that I wanted the guitar to sound like it was like kind of crumbling and like falling apart. And he's the sound engineer for most of my stuff. He only did a couple of the songs on this record though. We also did some at Wonder Park and then he mixed everything. And yeah, I don't know. I just got so excited thinking about that song. I think I lost my train of thought. No, but yeah, it mostly came out of that melody. I just really liked it. And that's what I made it, the whole song kind of just about that melody. And
yeah, I mean, and Oceanator is like technically a solo project, which, I mean, I've seen you talk about how it kind of like gives you the flexibility to, like, when you're recording, kind of pick the musicians that you work with, kind of like based on whose style will fit the tracks. I'm curious to hear a little bit more about that kind of like process of collaboration.
Yeah, basically, so for this record, there's five songs that we did at Wonder Park Studios in Brooklyn, which is run by Eva Lawitz and Chris Krasno. And Eva plays bass on those five songs as well. And basically, so for those songs that I knew Eva was, once I like finished the demos and stuff, for the songs I knew Eva was going to be playing bass on, usually what I do is just have like a general idea of what I want it to be like. And then there's specific things like in Hideaway, that weird bass line in the verse that's like do 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 or whatever it is, you know. I think I sent like a garage band of that to them. I was like, I want this to be the baseline for that part. And they were like, wait, really? I was like, yes. And then when we played it, they were like, oh, okay. But like the rest of the song, I just let Eva do whatever, because I know that whatever they do is going to be awesome. And then, you know, we have a like, not very many. I think we had like one full rehearsal before we recorded those five songs. Because I kind of send everyone the demo and give them like notes of what I'm thinking, and then kind of let them do their own thing. And then during the rehearsal, if there's something that I like doesn't really fit with what I was thinking, then we will talk about it. Or if there's something very specific that I want them to do, I'll show them that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the reason that I asked Eva and Andrew, who plays drums on four of the tracks, and then Aaron, who plays drums on Heartbeat, to play is because I like the way that they play. So I don't want to like say too much to lead them in. I don't want to like, you know, if otherwise I would just do it myself, you know, like, which I do for some of the songs, like I Would Find You. I knew exactly how I wanted every part of it to go. My brother played the drums on that one, but I played everything else because I knew I had it all already 100% exactly how I wanted it. So I was like, there's no point in showing someone else this bass line that is exactly how I want it. I'll just do it.
I know over like the last year or so, you've kind of like shored up the live lineup, and I'm curious how that kind of like, how the, you know, lack of like specifics in the recording, you know, how that kind of like translates to the live show.
Yeah. So, well, Andrew, who plays on the recording on four of the songs on drums, is one of the people who's now playing with me most of the time live as well. So, a lot of those songs we had played a few times together before we even went into record them, so he did have a little more time with them to kind of, you know, for us to all figure out what we want to do. But yeah, and then Tony, who's playing bass now, just has a great ear. So they learned all the songs mostly on their own, just from listening. And then I had said, like, you know, we're going to be playing as a three piece, so there's a lot of sections that the guitar won't have a rhythm guitar behind it because I'll be playing lead. Mm. So, you know, we need to figure out how to keep that energy there. And they just kind of, they get it, you know, like, so like when I would drop out to do a lead, they would maybe play chords or just figure out like go lower an octave or whatever they need to do to make the song still feel really full. So I think the three of us, I don't want this to sound like I'm saying other incarnations were bad, because I don't think so. I think everyone I've played with has been awesome, and I've played with a lot of people, and the band has sounded really great with all of them. But something about the three of us, I think working together, like we all just kind of we get it and gel without talking about it at all, which I think is what you know you strive for in a band.
For sure.
So yeah, I don't know. They kind of brought their energy to the table, and now, and we all get along really well, and it's a good lineup.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And I'm curious, I'm guessing in the 2 years since the album's been recorded, you've, you know, kind of been, you know, starting to at least work on some other stuff. I'm curious if does it seem to be going in a more like a traditional band direction rather than, you know, being a solo project?
No. I've been writing a bunch of stuff, and I think for the next one, it's shaping up to be that I'm actually just gonna play everything myself this time. So go in the opposite way, weirdly. But you know, I the stuff that is finished so far is all stuff that is like very 100% finished. So I'll probably, depending on if I want to, sometimes I like playing recording with other people so we can play it all together and have it that kind of have that live feel. But I'll probably do this one how I did like I Would Find You and January 21st, which is just like an instrument at a time. And build it up. But ideally, they'll be the ones that will be playing on tour when that someday happens.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know that for the release show, you're planning on, you know, trying to be all in the same room. How's that kind of shaping up?
It's looking good so far. Our plan is that we're all going to get tested. Hopefully, I mean, I know testing results were like 2 weeks. Mine took 2 weeks the last time. I'm just hoping it gets better. But, and then we're going to go down to Maryland and they want to camp in the backyard to be extra safe. So that's fine. They're bringing their own tents and stuff. And then when we're together, we're just going to be masked and keeping distance. And, you know, when we're going to try to set the stage up so that since I can't wear a mask to sing, I'll be like far away from them. And we've all been mostly like, other than, you know, when you got to go to the grocery store and stuff, safely sitting far from your friends in the park or whatever. we're all being really careful anyway. So I think it's going to work out, but we don't want to say 100% until we're there, you know, cause who knows what's going to happen with COVID.
For sure. And I mean, we've kind of been talking about like the community that you've been building with musicians around your own work. And it feels like that's kind of present in all aspects of like your project, you know, from, you know, the art, the charities that you work with for the Plastic Miracles label and, you know, some of the other plans that I've heard that you've had for the label, especially as far as like, you know, or events and stuff. I'm curious where that kind of like drive for community comes from and, you know, kind of just a little bit more about that community building effort that you have.
Yeah, I guess like I grew up going to punk shows and that was always a thing, you know. You go to the punk show and there'd be people tabling at it and people would be talking about stuff and they'd be giving you information about places to donate or volunteer or whatever. So that's just always kind of gone hand in hand for me, music scene wise. And so then when I was starting the label, I wanted it to be something that I could, that would not just be like, I don't know. I wanted it to involve a lot of people in a way that felt comfortable for everyone and kind of helped build stuff and just kind of gave back something, I guess. I don't know. It's just kind of, I didn't specifically think to do it, I guess. It just, that's how I think to do things. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it seems like it definitely, like the intention with it is to, you know, benefit as many people as possible rather than profit off them.
Totally. Yeah, I don't think... I mean, unless something super wild happens, like I don't think that label is going to make any money, like, mm-hmm. like it's going to make some money to put back into itself is my goal. I'm hoping that soon it'll pay for itself. So it's not like something that I'm like putting my own money into every time. Cause like, that's definitely not going to be sustainable for me, mm-hmm. but, that's as much money as I plan on it making is enough for it to keep putting out stuff and being able to put out other people's tapes and hopefully more vinyl as it grows. But I don't think it's ever going to be like my job, you know?
And I mean, as far as like, how you mentioned earlier, kind of like you've been learning so much about, you know, the back end and stuff like that. How, can you tell me a little bit more about like that discovery process for you?
Yeah, it's a lot of talking to friends who have started labels or, like I've talked to Josh from Self Aware and Namdi, everyone knows Namdi, but over at Super and folks like that. Lamo Records like just sent me an email. A couple other people just like reached out and were like, hey, like saw you started a label. That's awesome. If you have questions, just feel free to hit us up. And so yeah, a lot of people will actually from Tiny Engines. I texted him when I was like first putting my first things up on like on this, trying to do the Spotify distribution and stuff, and he like talked me through that. So people have been super, super nice and super helpful. So it's just kind of been a lot of leaning on other folks, and it's cool. There's this whole label community out there. I'm sure I've forgotten a ton of people because I've talked to a lot of very awesome people, and just finding so many other small labels and just kind of watching what they do and seeing what they do on Twitter and tweeting at each other things, you know, it's been fun. And that's how I've learned a lot of this stuff, is just by doing and watching and listening and asking.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, just kind of generally talking about this kind of jogged my memory. I was on another podcast recently talking about a punk record from like the 70s, and I was, you know, kind of in researching it, you know,
was it Punk Lotto Pod?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh yeah, I forgot you were on there too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was just like really interesting when I was like researching it about the differences in the music industry back then. Like, I feel like punk, you like, when you think of it, you think of it being like DIY, but a lot of that like early punk stuff was released on like these bigger labels, and it was kind of like such a commercial thing starting out. I don't know. I just think it's really interesting that like how, you know, it's kind of come full circle, or not full circle, but it's like the DIY aspect is what's been doubled down upon.
Totally. I know Lookout Records didn't end up that great, but I was always into Lookout as a kid. And that was one of like my models. And I remember when Green Day moved to, I just can't not talk about Green Day apparently. When Green Day moved to Warner Brothers, they like made a big deal about keeping their first two records on Lookout for until Lookout started missing payments to like all the bands. I don't know if you know anything about them, but I read recently the book that Larry Livermore put out called How to Ruin a Record Label, and the I's in parentheses, because it's like how to run a record label but ruin it. But that's about Lookout Records, and it was cool to read that and just see like it started up very much a similar way all these other small labels have started up, where it's like kind of wanted to do it, saw these cool bands, like thought had their own band, and were like, oh, I want to put out my record, I want to put out my friend's record, and then it just grows from there. So yeah, I think that's cool that there's so many people doing that now, just for the love of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you mentioned Green Day being someone that you can't kind of like not bring up. Yeah. I feel like the kind of fuzzed out grungy power pop sound of Oceanator isn't something I can necessarily like draw a direct comparison to another band. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how you kind of like initially, you know, went about finding your style and what some of like the influences that you draw from are.
Yeah, I think the finding the style thing just came from playing and writing a lot. It wasn't like deliberate, like I'm gonna find this style that's different and my own. It just kind of happened after just doing this since I think I wrote my first song when I was like 9 or 10. So I've been writing for a long time and kind of, you know, focusing in as I go on like the things that I like the most. But I listened to obviously Green Day growing up a ton. I really love Elliott Smith. I listened to a lot of David Bazan and Pedro the Lion and Wolf Parade and the Distillers. It was huge for me for a while there. And then like classic, I loved the Beatles a lot, and a lot of soul stuff, a lot of 60s soul, Curtis Mayfield and Otis Redding and all those guys that my dad used to play.
Oh, yeah, I've been on a huge Otis Redding kick lately.
Oh, so good. So good. But yeah, all that stuff. Listened to a bunch of funk for a while. And like, but I'd say the biggest influences has just been 90s rock was what I started listening to when I first started playing guitar. So like all of those bands kind of, even if they weren't ones that I actively listened to outside of the radio or whatever, they kind of worked their way in there. So yeah, I'd say those are some big influences. I'm probably forgetting a million. David Bowie.
That's all good. I mean, you mentioned earlier how the kind of the record kind of ends with Sunshine, with kind of a more, you know, a more hopeful message in a way. And I feel like the pairing with The Sky Is Falling and Sunshine is something that I found really interesting. And I feel like there's kind of a similar flip of the script in A Crack in the World, where it kind of starts with like these bleak lyrics, and then near the end, you know, even though instrumentally it gets more dark and grungy, it kind of has like that more positive message. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I just it's something I've also been working on just in general, like even when things are feeling terrible and negative and awful, just kind of trying to stay positive. I mean, it sounds silly, I guess, but like yeah, just trying to stay positive and look at what things are good, you know, like here's all these terrible things and here's one nice thing that I remember, and let's focus on that nice thing for now until I can kind of build up some more nice things or get out of this horrible rut. So I guess that's how that kind of came about. It's just kind of like trying not to sink too far into despair.
Yeah, and I'm curious, has there been, you know, something, was it like a practice that led to you putting that into the music, or was kind of like the music the sort of reason that you were starting to be able to do that?
Like the music itself, or?
Yeah, I mean, like the music, like as an outlet, did it kind of like help you start to get into that mindset?
No. I mean, it's always, music has always been the thing I go to in all moods, you know. So I guess in a broad sense, yes, but in a more exact literal sense, no. You know, just kind of trying to do more, just looking at, just thinking more about psychological stuff and exercise, like cognitive behavioral exercises, and then later like going to therapy and stuff but just like, you know, all that sort of.
For sure. And yeah, it definitely makes sense that would then kind of like bleed into the subject matter of the music, for sure.
Yeah. And also in 2018, like a pretty big thing that had been a huge, terrible part of my life for many, many years, I separated from somewhat. So that kind of helped see things a little more clearly and more positively.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't really necessarily have like a specific question about it, but it seems like you're doing some really cool stuff over on Patreon, and I'd love to hear more about it and kind of just give you the chance to like pitch it to new listeners.
Sure. Yeah. I have, I started the Patreon. I'd been meeting, you know, people have been doing them and I thought it seemed cool and I was planning to do one anyway. And then I made it in March because every job I had, both musically and non-musically, was canceled. And I was like, well, I guess it's a good time to start this Patreon, both for money reasons, but also because I have some time on my hands now. So basically what I'm trying to do with it, I have like a little podcast that I started of my own called Stoked to Announce. That's all just Patreon, and it's only the 2 episodes so far, but I'm working on it and putting up old like demos or songs that I've recorded. There's a couple songs I put up there that I've recorded in like 2014 and I really like them, but they haven't fit with any of the records I've put out, the EPs or this new record. So they just kind of keep hanging around. So I put up some kind of unmixed demo versions of those because I like them and I want people to hear them. I just don't think they fit on any of the releases yet. And then I have a brand new song that I'm going to put up there probably next month, that once I get some time to demo it, but it's pretty much there. And just kind of some covers or just whatever, mostly music stuff right now, stuff that I feel like sharing. And at Patreon, people get first listen of anything that's going to come out. And I always say, please don't spill the beans. And it seems like no one spilled the beans yet, which is cool.
For sure. Been,
yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I might do some, if I can finish up some of the short stories I've been kind of kicking around, I might put those up, just kind of doing whatever.
Awesome. And that sounds like it really harkens back to, you know, the whole community that we've been talking about, you know, kind of throughout the episode. Like it makes a lot of sense that, you know, that's kind of been a good platform for you.
Yeah, I really like it. And I like that people can kind of interact with stuff and put up polls sometimes to see, you know, what people are thinking about. And yeah, I think it's fun. I'm stoked to do some more with it as the album cycle winds down and I have a little more time to put, so maybe do something weird over there. You know, maybe we all watch Netflix together one day, you know.
That is not a reward I've heard before.
Yeah, I think we could all watch that Sam Cooke documentary or something on the Netflix party. I don't know. We'll see.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, I always kind of like to wrap up by, you know, asking for either like a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about, you know, whether it's music or, you know, life in general, or obviously the current circumstances, kind of whatever's been on your mind that you kind of wanted to get out there.
Yeah, I guess it's going to sound so stupid and kind of cliche, but something I've been thinking about a lot, especially today, because I'm having a pretty bad day, to be honest, just brain-wise. I've been thinking about, this is still our one life. So even on the bad days, try and make the most of it. I know that's, everyone says that, but I think it's easy to say and much, much harder to do. So that's my advice, is I'm terrible at it and I'm working on it, but on days that I can manage it, it's definitely helpful.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that it doesn't hurt to hear over and over again.
Yeah, too. Every time I hear it, it's helpful to me too. Or even if I see, like, you know, when you're scrolling through and someone's like, here's a reminder tweet to unclench your jaw or whatever, like those things. I love that. So I feel like repetitive, hearing good things repeatedly is, it'll get it into your brain, hopefully.
And there you go. You just got schooled on all things Oceanator. Elise has so many cool projects going on that there's surely something for you in there. So be sure to check them all out. And seriously, the music is sick. So Things I Never Said should be at the top of that list. Lots of sweet bundles are selling out, so get on it ASAP. A special thank you, as always, to Sound Talent Media and The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyOnTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at FlyOnTheCallPod@gmail.com. See you next week. Fly on the call.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.